Major support for making the music comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. That's my band ushering in the new year 1992 at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. Jazz bands have been used to mark special occasions, to punctuate movies and TV shows, and to bring people together in that sweet, romantic embrace. Jazz music just gives events an American feeling, and that's a feeling I think we can't get enough of out here. Today, the functions of jazz. We'll be hearing about a lot more of them. I'm Wynton Marcellus, making the music. We always talk about listening to music, or even nowadays, like at a big rock concert or something, going to see music. But there are also many ways that we use music. We use music for dancing, we sing songs in religious ceremonies, we march to music in parades, and so on. Jazz music can fulfill all of these functions. I remember playing with my band at a big rock concert, and everybody was saying, man, y'all cannot play jazz and come behind these rock bands because the people just won't be able to hear that music. It's too hard for them to hear. But when we put some of that Jelly Roll on the people, they were grooving harder than us. Jazz is accessible because it reflects our way of living. It was born out of our need to use music. It can be the soundtrack to illicit late-night exchanges. To the entertainment of youngsters.
Yes, I like a doodle of beats and chick-a-boodle of blue. But the thingamabob that doesn't jump, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Blues! I like a doodle of beats, chick-a-boodle, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Now you put them together, Kate, what have you got? Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo.
It includes all of us. That's the Eureka Brass Band just finishing up some po' boy sandwiches from my hometown, New Orleans, Louisiana. There's nothing in the world like playing a parade. The people are lining the streets and they know the songs. There's the feeling of importance. People of all ages participate. The dancers improvise to the music and the musicians improvise to the dance. The parade goes all throughout the community, and if you're playing, you feel as if you've entered somebody's house to give a private concert. It's humid, hot, and sweaty, but it feels good. It's unforgettable. And this has been going on since the first years of this century. Here's actor Hakeem Suleiman reading the words of Louis Armstrong.
In those days in New Orleans, There was always something that was nice, and always with music. They used to advertise with them big long wagons they used during the week for hauling furniture. Be a big sign on the side of the wagon advertising a dance or a boxing fight. The band would sit in the wagon on chairs with the trombone and the bass at the end where the tailgate lets down. They'd stop at a corner and the band would play. In the evening, people, colored and white, used to give parties on the lawns in front of their houses, set up with lemonade and sandwiches and fried chicken and gumbo. And the band sit down in front of the door on the porch and play. And people danced.
For all the people of New Orleans, colored, as in various hues of brown, and white, as in pink to tan, or even Creole, music just came with the terrain. This was the effect of an African-derived musical conception that was not strangled in New Orleans as it was in other parts of the United States. Composer and scholar Gunther Schuller.
African native music and early American jazz both originate in a total vision of life in which music, unlike the art music of Europe, is not a separate autonomous social domain. In other words, African music is functional music. It is dance music. It is ritual music. It is music created for matters of birth and death and work songs and all kinds of things that are actual functions in one's daily life. So it's not a separate music like art music of Europe, which exists in a concert hall and you sit down and you listen to it. In African music to this day, the music is part of everyday life.
Work songs are a good example of functional music. It gives the workers something they need, a steady rhythm to regulate and coordinate their labor, but it also provides an uplifting accompaniment to that labor. And Lord knows they need it. It gives a soon this day will end spirit to the proceedings. Yes. And for those of us who have a little more leisure time or who have forgotten about that work, well, jazz music can raise our consciousness and bring us right back to the feeling of the work song. That feeling is in the music of Max Roach. This is Driver Man.
Driver Man, he made a life, but the mammy ain't his wife. Chopping cotton, don't be slow. Better finish out your row. Keep a moving with that plow. Driver Man will show you how. Get to work and root that stump. Driver Man will make you jump. Better make your hammer ring. Driver Man will start to swing. Ain't but two things on my mind. Driver Man and quitting time. Driver Man, the kind of boss. Ride a man and lead a horse. When his cat or nine tail fly, you'll be happy just to die. Run away and you'll be found by his big old red bone hound. Paddy Roller bring you back, make you sorry you is black. Driver Man, he made a life, but a mammy ain't his wife. Ain't but two things on my mind. Driver Man and quitting time.
Well, music all over the world is used for ceremonial purposes. And in American music, the most famous ceremony is the New Orleans Jazz Funeral, and we still play them. Here's New Orleans clarinetist and scholar, Dr. Michael White.
A brass band in the traditional New Orleans funeral procession is very important. The marching brass band plays music that both highlights the sadness of the event of the person's passing, but also music that celebrates in a joyous way the fact that the person has gone on to hopefully a better reward in union with the Creator. So the brass band is very important because it has several phases of the funeral procession in which it comes out. One is that the band usually starts off a few blocks away from where a ceremony begins, and it marches toward the church while the service is going on, or just before, playing hymns. And at the end, the musicians line up, and as they're bringing the casket out of the church, they play soft, sad, slow hymns and dirges. After the coffin is placed into the hearse, then the band proceeds before the hearse playing slow dirges for a few blocks. And then they perform what they call cutting the body loose, which is when the band lines up on two sides of the street and allows the funeral procession to proceed through. And the whole while the band is playing a slow, sad dirge. After the body passes through and the rest of the procession is gone for a few blocks away, then the faster songs begin. Many times those faster songs include something like Didn't He Ramble?
That's Dr. Michael White with my band recreating the music of a New Orleans funeral before an audience at the Village Vanguard in New York City. The great pianist and composer Jelly Roll Morton said, in New Orleans, they believed truly to stick right close to the scripture. That means, rejoice at the death and cry at the birth. The extremes of grief and joy expressed at a New Orleans funeral demonstrate the range and depth of human feeling in jazz music, and it's a quality that I am sure we will never lose. Benny Goodman Orchestra was heard on radio broadcasts coast to coast. They sold millions of records and they performed in some of the greatest concert halls in the world. But it's important to remember that this tune was their theme song, and it's entitled Let's Dance. Hank Jones is one of the greatest living jazz pianists. He played with Benny Goodman in the 50s.
When jazz, if you want to go back to the very beginnings in New Orleans and all that, you know, jazz music started, actually, it was played for dancing. And there was a lot more dancing in those days. Mm-hmm. That's how jazz really got started. Later on, audiences began to sit and listen to jazz in concert forms. And maybe one of the ultimate answers is to involve people more in dancing. Mm-hmm. And to play music for people to dance, the tempos have to be moderated quite a bit, I think. You know?
So do you think that when people stopped dancing to jazz, that was a blow for the music? Or it took something out of it?
I think so. I think people's involvement was greatly lessened.
Well, what do you think it did for dance?
Well, I think it had a synergistic effect in a negative way. Innovations in dance probably suffered as mm-hmm. a result of... not being associated anymore with the kind of music that stimulated the dance in the first place, you know. Mm-hmm. The two have to work together, and I think when they do, both benefit.
That's a very important point Mr. Jones just made. And I believe it's true for all the functions of jazz. Jazz has a lot to contribute to our daily lives, and the musicians, in turn, are nourished by being closer to the people. Here's an example. Ali Jackson is a young drummer. He and his colleague Michael Weiss, they feel like they need to play more for dancing, but just don't get the opportunity.
I think it's very important that everybody has an opportunity to play with a dancer because you have a different conception of music. I mean, before, music is played for people to feel good, and dancing is a part of that. So if you just playing music and people are listening, that's different. That's like more like classical music. People just listen to the music. It's on an intellectual basis, but it's not... as elevated on a spiritual basis when you have somebody dancing or somebody who feels the music and it gets inside of them.
See, playing for dancers is really the closest, the most intimate that a musician can be with his audience. You know, the audience can listen to a jazz performance, but when they're dancing, they're really participating. This is the closest we come to an audience participation and being part of the whole process of making the music.
The great and known-to-be-funky pianist, Horace Silver.
It knocks me out when people get up and dance to my music because, let's face it, a lot of the bebop stuff is kind of complex and fast and not really danceable. But, you know, some of our stuff is that way, but a lot of our stuff is danceable. And when we do play something that's danceable, to see them get up and dance to it really knocks me out. You know, I remember a few years back we played a tour of Japan, And one of the things we played was at a hotel. It was not meant for dancing. It was meant just for concert setting, you know, tables and setups and, you know, drinks and stuff. And the very last number we played was Filthy McNasty. And we got a groove going on that thing, and the people got up and started dancing in the aisles, you know, and that just knocked me out.
Do you think that when people stopped dancing to jazz, it was a blow for the music?
Not necessarily, because, jazz is meant for dancing and for listening. You know, there's certain parts of jazz that really would be better not to dance to, be better to listen to, because they're a little more complex and you can get a little bit more out of them if you sit and project yourself into the music and draw from it, you know. But then there are other areas of jazz that are less complex and more danceable, and that's great too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I like it both ways, you know. I like to have people dance to some of my music, and some of it I prefer them to sit down and listen to, you know.
Okay, you can sit down and listen, or you can dance. But either way, the music, well, it might just bring you a little closer to the person next to you. And that's a very important function of jazz music. Well, not just jazz, any music. And it's what inspired Joe Williams to become a masterful jazz singer. Mr. Williams, I'd like to know if there was some particular performance or environment that made you want to become a jazz singer.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Being able to sing, and when I was singing in Chicago years ago with orchestras, if it was a small combo or if it was a big band, it was for dancing always. Mm-hmm. While we sang and while we played, people danced. So you were communing with those people as they held each other in their arms. And now many years later, of course, their children, and then now for me, a third generation of children have come up and said that my parents made love to your music, held each other in their arms to your music. And men come up and say, my wife never kissed me until we heard you sing Stardust with Fats Waller at the Regal Theater, the organ.
It is 5 o'clock in the morning, and there is no one on the street but me. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, there is no one on the street but me. And I'm evil, tired, and lonely, 'cause you're not where you ought to be. I'd be so happy, baby, if you were where you ought to be. Morning, I'd be so happy, baby, if you were where you ought to be this morning. My whole world is empty, darling, because you're not here with me.
Joe Williams with Count Basie and his swinging orchestra. 5 o'clock in the morning. Well, it's easy to imagine dancing and falling deeply in love to a performance like this one.
I'll close my eyes to everyone but you. I'll see you standing there, I'll lock my heart to any other love affair. I'll close my eyes to everything that's gay. If you're not there to share each lovely day, see you with my heart.
Mildred Bailey, with a jazz band led by the pianist Ellis Larkins, I'll Close My Eyes, written by Buddy Kay and Billy Reed. Every jazz musician I've talked to mentions the dance connection as being extremely healthy for the music. You have the immediate participation of the people without sinking down into, come on, y'all, clap your hands, or sing, oh, way, oh. You see the men and the women together in romantic and erotic pursuits. You see the fire of intricate and fancy movement, and people love it. It makes you play in certain tempos and with a particular rhythmic feel. Here's writer Albert Murray and pianist and singer Max Morath on top of the soundtrack of the swinging Count Basie.
The spirit of jazz always to counterstate adversity and negative feelings about the outcome of things. That is, life is a low-down, dirty shame that should happen to a dog. How do you get with it? You have to have a slapstick behavior for slapdash situation, which means try to maintain that dynamic equilibrium, you see. Jazz is the music that does that. Jazz provides the basis for that type of choreography. Jazz is there to stimulate a type of total body response. When you're in a jazz dance, it's a courtesy, there's a certain propriety. When you were dancing with a stranger in a big dance hall, there's a certain type of thing, there's not a license. There's great etiquette involved.
I mean, I think one of the things that we'd just all be delighted to see right now is a great new dance craze come through. Some couple kids come through and they've got some new dance step, like when the ragtime dances and Vernon and Irene Castle came through, swept the country, and everybody was happy with that. And the musicians played for dancing. I think that's one of the things that we could look for, and I'll tell you, I think it'll happen.
Well, I tell you, Max, by the time that happens, we most certainly will have had this break. This is The Functions of Jazz. I'm Wynton Marcellus, making the music. Thank you.
cotton lisle is out of style. Honey child, jump for joy. Don't you grieve, little Eve. All the hounds, I do believe, have been killed. Ain't you thrilled? Jump for joy. Have you seen pastures groovy? Green pastures was just a Technicolor movie. When you stomp up to heaven and you meet old St. Pete, tell that boy, jump for joy. Step right in, give Pete some skin and jump for joy.
Now that's dance music of a different sort. It's show music from Duke Ellington's musical Jump for Joy. Jazz has been an accompaniment for professional dancers, actors, singers, comedians, and so on and so forth. Those performances demand rehearsal and split-second timing. In vaudeville and on Broadway and the nightclubs, jazz musicians have always risen to the occasion. Doc Cheatham is the dean of jazz trumpet players, and he's a veteran of a whole lot of these shows.
It was very difficult, but you enjoyed it because the trumpet players that played shows specialized in playing for the chorus girls. Because the chorus girls, you had to play beautiful for them and good for them, else they wouldn't enjoy their, you know, their dance. You take a 12 or 15 show girls and you start swinging them and they can dance and they're happy. Inspire me somewhat, and you can ad-lib a little bit when you play for dances.
Mm-hmm.
And that inspires them.
So it's a communication, a dialogue.
Yes, it is, yes.
Doc, did you play in pit bands for stage shows?
Oh, yes, many of them, many of them.
With comedians?
Comedians?
Mm-hmm.
Surely, oh, yes.
What was a comedian show like?
Well, this guy, Jimmy Cox, who wrote Once I Lived the Life of a Millionaire, spending all my money and I didn't care. I played for him. He didn't have any music. That's before it was published.
Mm-hmm.
He would come to rehearsal at the theater and walk to the middle of the stage, and Miss Hargraves, who was a pianist, would hear him sing the song. And she would remember it. But a lot of Bessie Smith and a lot of those singers didn't have music.
Nobody knows you when you're down and out. In my pocket, not one penny, and my friends, I haven't any. But if I ever get on my feet again, then I'll meet my long lost. It's mighty strange, without a doubt. Nobody knows you when you're down and out. I mean, when you're down and out.
But the demands of playing so often and in so many different settings, like theaters, shows, comedians, movies, or solo work, lead trumpet playing, did it improve your playing?
Oh, absolutely. You learn a lot of tunes like that, especially blues and things, yeah.
Song, dance, acting, and literature all meet in the theater. And jazz is no stranger to it. It's given a lot to the theater. Great performers like Bessie Smith or Ethel Waters or all the jazz-influenced songwriters like George Gershwin, Fats Waller, and Harold Arlen. Contact with the demands of other artistic disciplines always gives a musician a great understanding of the functions of music, and it's no different for the jazz musician. Here's Dr. David Baker.
Jazz music was inextricably linked to the dance. James Rhys Europe was so much a part of what Irene and Vernon Castle came up with when they did the Lindy Hop and all of those things. And many of these things began in the black community and then were taken up by the people who formalized the various styles. One of the forms that transcended all the particular eras was tap dance. And I've heard people lament the passing of this as an art form. The fact that black kids for many years didn't want to learn to tap dance because they saw that as a part of Bojangles and Step and Fetch It and the guys who were considered the Uncle Toms of another time. And it's only, I think, maybe in the last 10 or 15 years that tap dance has begun to enjoy a renaissance.
Yes, thinking that people were Tomming has kept a lot of us from some good information out here. I know I ran from Louis Armstrong for many years under that misconception. I want you to hear how a real professional song and dance relates to the musician. I assembled a group of young musicians in the studio for a tap dance number. Drummer Ali Jackson, pianist Michael Weiss, and bassist John Benitez. And we brought in the 18-year-old tap dancer Bakari Wilder with the veteran Broadway singer and actor Andre DeShields to perform it. This song is entitled Tapping to the Tune in My Heart.
If I should happen to hear someone rapping, I'd just start tapping, tapping to the tune in my heart. I won't be napping, I'll throw my cap in, and I start scrapping, tapping to the tune in my heart. Some folks have said that tapping's dead, buried, and gone now. I beg to disagree, just send them all to me. And while they're yapping, their jaws all flapping, their feet start tapping, tapping to my crooning, tapping to the tune in my heart.
I would like to ask the musicians, how does your playing change when you play with a dancer as opposed to, let's say, playing with a horn or in a trio setting or regular instrumental setting?
I think you have to be extra sensitive.
Since the decline of, I guess, vaudeville shows and Broadway shows, not just drummers, but they've lost a certain skill as far as being flexible with, you know, working with like a singer or dancer, because they don't do that anymore.
Certain elements of a musician's overall professionalism is developed by these types of disciplines.
When you say overall professionalism, what do you mean?
Ability to function in a wide variety of musical
settings
and play at your best level at all times.
Things like reading music?
Reading music, having good time. In other words, being able to play the tempo on your instrument very precisely, to feel rhythm inside, to adapt to musical situations where maybe not everything is written, but you have to pay attention at all times because there's so many things going on. It's a great lesson in tempos because there's really a difference of consideration when you're playing for people who are just listening and people who are dancing. You have to pick the right tempo.
What do you mean when you say tempo?
The amount of time between each beat.
The drums and the dancer throughout time have had a a dialogue. The drums, like being in African music, the drums mark the dancer. The drums will mark the actual steps that the dancer makes. And in this case, since he was tap dancing, he was creating or improvising like a horn player would improvise. And my job is to keep the groove along with embellish what he's doing and be a unit with the rhythm section, my fellow partners in the rhythm section.
John, what are you thinking about when you play with a dancer? Are you trying to stay out of the way? Are you trying to play more basic? Or how does the dancing affect the way that you're playing the bass?
Well, for me, the experience is that I'm seeing that it's a mutual excitement. Mm-hmm. The dancer also excites the drummers. But in this case, we also have to keep the rhythm, like the drummers say. And we have to keep the groove and be able to listen what he's doing and interplay with the dancer.
I wanted to say that we play jazz clubs all the time. It's very rare that we find people that will dance to the music. And I think from the age of like when rock and roll was introduced, it changed like in jazz music. People didn't dance to jazz anymore. They started dancing to other musics. Big bands used to play for dancers all the time. Now that's not so. There are very few big bands in existence now, let alone that play for people who want to, you know, dance. I know in my generation, people aren't exposed. That's a part of culture and a part of our American tradition that's been, like, totally just been neglected.
Do you think that the public could dance to some version of jazz music again, or do you think that that's not possible?
Absolutely. I believe it's possible. It's just the fact that nobody's been introduced to it.
It's just a matter of exposure, mm-hmm. primarily.
If we could play more compositions that could excite the people, you know, in touch that part of them, it will be easier for play jazz music, you know.
Drummer Ali Jackson, pianist Michael Weiss, and bassist John Benitez. It shouldn't be considered an achievement to run the audience away. I mean, I really think the primary objective of the jazz musician should be to excite and involve the audience. When musicians focus on putting our music in a different context, we get a greater variety of music and we communicate to a larger audience. You can't argue with that. Dizzy Gillespie always said, bring the music to the people. And he did it through humor.
Hey, baby, let's eat more meat. Hey, baby, let's eat more meat.
Sharp blue, dee-wee, oh, blue.
Cause the meat on the Texas cow is cheap.
You do dee bows and
oop-doo-bop. Hey, please, let's eat. Let's eat more meat.
Hey, beef, what's that? No more meat?
No pork, just beef.
Philly a
comedy and jazz have enjoyed a special relationship. For years, comedians have opened for jazz musicians. I'm talking about people like Red Fox, Lenny Bruce, Moms Mabley, Richard Pryor, and Bill Cosby. And it wasn't like there was a big wall or something between the music and the comedians. I mean, they all like to eat the same food and hang out together. Both things are designed for everybody to come out and have a good time and get something out of it. I'd like for you all to check out this 1947 recording of comedian Dusty Fletcher and his collaboration with jazz musicians Big Nick Nicholas, Jimmy Jones, Al McKibben, and J.C. Hurd. The result was a big hit called Open the Door, Richard. It's a good thing I'm not singing it.
Open the door, Richard. Open the door and let me. Open the door, Richard. Richard, why don't you open that door? Open the door, Richard.
I don't care. I'm gonna move sad dinner here. This old woman, she charging too much rent. $3 a month.
And got the nerve to be mad because we 11 months in the rear.
Why, she come acting me this morning, she said, when you boys trying to give me some of my back rent?
Open the door, Richard. Come on, open that door. Duke Ellington, well, he wrote music for many settings. He realized more than anyone else the many functions of jazz. Now, this gave his music a spectacular diversity and tremendous appeal. I mean, he kept his audience for 50 years, and they were never bored. Now we're going to hear how Duke captures the feeling of a losing bettor at the racetrack in a selection from something called the Degas Suite. Now, this is a kind of abstract function of jazz because it's a composition based on the art of Edgar Degas. Now he's on the edge of his seat, swinging, thinking that his horse is about to win. And you know what happens. Here's a selection from Duke Ellington's second sacred concert, music written to fulfill a spiritual function with a groove. It's entitled Almighty God Has Those Angels.
Almighty God has those angels away up there above, up there weaving sparkling fabrics just for you.
And here's the main title from Duke Ellington's soundtrack for the movie Anatomy of a Murder. The great pianist Hank Jones has performed in as many settings as Duke Ellington wrote music for. You accompanied many singers. You've accompanied dancers, tap dancers, all different types of dancers.
Elephant acts.
You've played on a television variety shows.
Dog acts.
CBS staff pianist for 20 years.
Juggling acts.
You played Arthur Godfrey, Ed Sullivan, Jackie Gleason shows. You've done all kind of studio work, commercials, recordings of every type of kind.
Played in parades.
You've seen how the music can work in many different settings.
Mm.
And how has this breadth of experience affected how you perceive jazz music and how jazz music functions in relation to the public?
Well, because of the great variety of things that I've done, you know, and have had to do and experiences that I've had with various groups, various rhythm sections, various singers, and forth, I more and more I realize that music is for the people. It's not just something that musicians should enjoy without regard to what people would like to hear, what people would like, would understand or could understand. Music can never, let's say, be on such a level that it's too difficult for the average person to understand because they have to relate to it. Otherwise, how can they support it? You see, what musicians need, I think, one of the things that we need is the support of a great number of people. Otherwise, our music doesn't go anywhere.
Hey!
feel it's important that jazz doesn't get too far away from the kind of functional contact we've traditionally had with people. If we do, then it'll be bad for jazz and bad for the people. In these times of hyphenated America, jazz has a lot to teach Americans and people all around the world about what it means to live in a democracy. The further we get from fulfilling as many of the functions of jazz as possible, the worse it will be for all of us. Writer Amiri Baraka.
As I've said so often, in these schools for even young children, they were playing the blues, they would also learn their history. You know, the most advanced music, you know, the Billie Holidays and the Duke Ellingtons, you know, I mean, the John Coltranes and so forth. Then the children's expectations of society in terms of answering the questions that their mind and their feelings pose to them would be raised to a much higher level.
The function of jazz in American education is maybe the most important function of all, especially in these times. It has a lot to teach us about what it means to be an American. And now that a lot of the past prejudices and ignorances against this music have changed, it's time for us to get down to it. But as David Baker says, not everybody's convinced.
Jazz has had a long, hard road trying to be a part of the educational establishment. I think the founding of the IAJ, International Association of Jazz Educators, which was born the National Association of Jazz Educators, was an attempt to put into the consciousness of the American educational institution how important it is to perpetuate this music which was born and first flourished in America. Even to this day, for instance, at the college level, I think you probably limit maybe to 10 colleges. If I were being expansive, I would say 20 colleges where an education major would have to take a single jazz course to get through their matriculation.
The great alto saxophonist, Jackie McLean.
I think it can make a better world for young people that are out there today. I think it can make a better world. Once they let the big secret out that this music is awesome and they play it for young children, they play Louis, play Duke Ellington, play Ray Charles, play Lester Young, and show the complete picture of the history of this music here in America, it's going to make better people to live in this country.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, jazz has a lot to contribute to modern life, in education, as social commentary, and just in bringing people together. And after you listen to it, your ears don't even hurt. Every time you come into contact with jazz music, it just makes you feel better or helps you to function in the world a little easier. And to me, that's the essence of what this great music is all about. I'm Wynton Marcellus, making the music. The producer of Making the Music is Margaret Howes. Murray Horowitz and I are the writers. Dottie Green is the editor, and Bettina Owens is the coordinator. Molly Murphy is the studio producer, and Rolando Arieta is the associate producer, with help from Larry Shields and Madeline Smith. The project engineer is John Carrillo, with technical assistance from Mark Greenhouse, Mark Wilder, Adam Blackburn, Jerry Volkers, Steve Rath, Steve Epstein, and John Harris of FNL Recording. Our thanks to the Institute of Jazz Studies, Rob Bamberger, Judy Morlatta, Nick Spitzer, Mark Schramm, John Hossie, member station WBGO, Newark, and Lorraine Gordon of the Village Vanguard. Thanks also to Murray Street Enterprise and Jazz from Lincoln Center. The consultants for making the music include Phil Schapp and Stanley Crouch, and the executive producer is Sandra Ratley Lewis, and you won't believe it, but we're still all getting along. Major support for making the music comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Anheuser-Busch Companies, National Public Radio member stations, and NPR. This is NPR, the one and only National Public Radio.